I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Opening Wednesday night at the Fire Hall Art Center, the 3rd of October, running until Saturday the 6th, is Cain and Abel, presented by the Biting School. One of the directors and performers of the show joins me now. I'll ask Ari Okakpour about this production, the themes from the biblical story that perhaps inspire this production, such as violence and the patriarchy. The show is performed in two parts by Ario and his brother Arash. The first half studies depictions of killing one's brother in different contexts and is highly physical and aggressive in rhythm. The second half of the performance presents a reaction to the absence of women from the biblical story. The Biting School is the company that both Arash and Ario founded, bringing their backgrounds of dance and theater to bear in performances at Dancing on the Edge Festival, Dance Days Victoria, Revolver Festival, and Dance in Vancouver, among others. Visit bitingschool.com and visit firehallartcenter.ca for tickets and information. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program, Ario Okakpour. Mr. Okakpour, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. I'm an only child, so I've never really thought about Cain and Abel as much as I guess you and your brother Arash have. Was that something that you've always thought about or people would say bring up to you?
No. Well, in a way, yes, because I was raised in Iran, so I basically in a lot of the school and teaching, Quran is a huge part of it. Uh-huh. And when I came to Canada, I noticed Bible is a huge part of it.
Mm.
It's always the religious studies and mythologies and all these old stories that really affect us has always been on our minds. And this only got triggered when we were commissioned to make a site-specific piece in Hatton Park, I believe, in Coral Harbor.
Uh-huh.
And we were supposed to make a 10-minute piece against the statue of King and Queen. It's removed at the moment. But when we saw King and Queen, this huge metal statues, we're like, oh, we're just two little boys in front of this. What do we do with this? And it was that moment that we kind of thought, oh, maybe it is Cain and Abel, so small in the shadow of Adam and Eve or any kind of God. So it just started like that.
Yeah. So when we go to the Fire Hall shortly and in a few days, what's the show like? What can people expect when they sit down and wait for the program to begin?
The show is, how I would describe it, is like a compilation of images, physical, basically images of light and sound and all of that string together like an expression.
Uh-huh.
And then in that way, in the light of that, people can come up with their own images, but also they might notice a certain kind of narrative forming. But definitely the focal point would be the two brothers, which is myself and Arash, and the relationship between them, the sensation between these two people on stage, and however it's perceived. I hope it was not too abstract what I said, but yeah.
I understand the first half will look at, say, from what I've read of it, it's very physical, and so the depiction of, say, the story of a brother killing another brother.
That's
something that people will see on stage. What's the second half?
Indeed, just to add quickly.
Sure. Yeah, please.
The first half is basically a compilation of different kinds of killing. Some of them are funny, some of them are violent, some of them are sad. And then we move into the second piece, which is inspired by Jean Genet's The Maid, one of the plays we love a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to adapt what people say inspired by, but I think it's a form of adaptation, a very free adaptation of different scenes of The Maid in a way that refers back to the first half. So it makes the whole night a full night of performance that you can refer in certain gestures to the Cain and Abel, but also you know that we are two sisters with the costume, with the images built, with the language we use sometimes.
Yeah.
And the second piece is basically a free adaptation of parts of The Maid.
Well, what's it like for you, Ario, to work with your brother in the arts as you do? I mean, changing the relationship, I don't know, I mean, it depends how close you are growing up, but I mean, I'm sure as you're older now, that must add another dimension to who you are and how you are together Does it?
I think so. I think if it does affect, it's so slow and gradual, we won't notice it. But sometimes I look back. Yes, when we were children, the age difference is like 7 years. But we only started to come into the same space later on when we got older. And what I like to think about is, like, I remember when I was a child, my parents were like, oh, like, I was constantly like, hey, I want a brother. Oh, I want a sibling.
Yeah.
I'm alone. Basically, till seven, I was alone. So I was like, I want to play with somebody. And then they brought Arash. And it was quite fitting that now I get to play with him for real. And I think it was always was supposed to kind of happen. And it did somehow happen. And the relationship is full of all the emotions and passions you might think of, full of love and anger and sorrow and, like, everything. But the one thing that is not replaceable is, like, certain kind of understanding of the smallest gestures or smallest thoughts that comes to his mind without saying, and I know it, and the same the other way as well. Mm. And so many people say it's because we're brothers. That's true. But also a lot of it is because we've been working with each other for a long time. I have a similar feeling with my other partners in theater when we make, and we have, let's say, an experience of 7 years performing in different projects together. So that kind of understanding has a lot to do with us making this choice to work together as well.
It's a sort of shorthand, I guess, that you have, right?
Yes, it seems like it. It seems like it. Although I'm philosophizing here. I think I have it, and it feels very smooth, but I only know it when I'm outside and thinking back.
Yeah, yeah. What? How do you think audiences will react, Ario, to seeing Cain and Abel as sisters?
Well, we're excited to see that. People in the showing that we had last year, people were supportive a lot. They were like, yes, you need to go farther. You need to go farther. I think we work with a lot of surrealism and grotesque, but a lot of tenderness is always underneath, and a lot of compassion always underneath. So that's how we cope with the world and in our work. It's just it's a reaction to the violence around us. So the show is going to be grotesque and violent in so many ways, but with a very strong undercurrent of love and compassion. So in so many ways, people constantly have different reactions. I had a friend once said that after the show, the first half, 3 years ago, he's like, is it okay? People are laughing at your very serious scenes. I'm like, well, yeah, they're supposed to do whatever they want. And he was like, but, you know, 10 people were laughing and 10 people were very serious. Mm. What is going on? I'm like, to be honest, I'm not to judge that. It's up to people. And that oscillation of sensation and emotion is supposed to be there, for sure.
Yeah. What? So as I mentioned a moment ago, it's a very physical show. So what do you and Arash do in terms of say, preparing yourself? I mean, it's a physically demanding show, isn't it?
Indeed. We take refuge in our trainings. I have a background in mime and physical theater in the let's say Grotowski method of preparing the body. Arash also has a very long experience in dance, and we pull from contact improvisation as well. These are very compassionate ways of preparing the body, listening to where the body is at the moment and listening to each other, as opposed to any kind of achievement of a perfect body to hit that high, because I think that's essentially dangerous, if not oppressive.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. So when you do a show like this night after night, what do you do to, say, prepare the just before curtain, say? Do you go about your life differently, say, on a show night than you would, say, when you were not performing?
Yeah, I don't think if I go about normally, no. I think, I usually try to not to take any other jobs during the day.
Yeah.
So I have the day to myself. But immediately before the curtain, yes, the warm-up. But the most important part of the warm-up is to warm up together, to come together, do either voice warm-up or warm-up in pairs, basically finding each other's energy and the rest of the ensemble. It will be like our designer, stage manager, whoever is over there to support us. I think it has a lot to do with the support system that we have. Not to make it too romantic, but I think it is, actually.
Yeah, especially the people, you know, that we don't see on stage, I'm sure, right?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, that's the preparation is the love and the support. And of course, with the normal warm-ups that we do.
Yeah, Ario, the story of Cain and Abel. I mean, as we've discussed these past few minutes, I mean, it really is a violent story. But at the same time, it's terribly relevant to today, isn't it? Especially with what we see in the news all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, when you go and perform the show? Is that something that you keep in mind about what people will get out of it, say, in terms of the context of the times that we live in?
Sure. Ideally, yes, we have thought about it. We have thought about all the possible things that will come up. The discussions on, for example, brothers. What do we have as brothers? Palestinians and Israelites, right? Like the fight over there. What do we have in Canada? We have the, let's say, the British descent and the First Nation. We have that kind of brothers fighting in the same, like, killing each other, literally, right? So we have it all around us, and we have thought about it. There are images referred to those, but we do really emphasize not to give one single message, and I think that will be the liberation of the audience so they can actually decide, okay, do I want to see this politically right now, or do I want to see it socially? Or do I want to just see it in a familial way? So many people came as like, oh, my God, I have a brother. This show is about me and my brother fighting every night. I'm like, oh, that's amazing. That's really nice to hear that. Because we have put codes, of course. We have worked in about different contexts. But ideally, it should be accessible to everybody however they choose, not however I choose.
So what's it like then when say, half the audience, as you mentioned a moment ago, may have one reaction? The other half another. Does that affect how the night is for you? I mean, whatever energy you get from an audience, as divided it might be, does that filter up to you on stage, say?
Well, for sure. We're listening to whatever's happening in the room. That will be ideal, actually, if fuels the rest of the performance. Because we're like, oh, okay, there is a conversation. Even if it's not verbal, it's a disagreement and a conversation in the energy of the room. However, I haven't experienced it, but if 100% of people really are shut down the piece, I wonder how that feels.
Yeah.
But it hasn't happened because of the choreography and the directorial choices that we put breathers, we put moments of joy and moments of knockiness, if I may say, and stuff like that.
Yeah, I guess that's all of life, isn't it? You're going to have a reaction 50% of the time to one thing, and you're right.
I hope so. Yes, yeah. that is the plan. Yes, if everybody comes out of the show in a very unified understanding of the piece, that won't be ideal, to be honest.
Yeah.
It will be too shallow, I would think. Maybe I'm just a bit too bold. Yeah.
What I mentioned this a minute ago about just how the times we live in, I mean, are awfully challenging for a lot of people. Do you find working in the arts that somehow? I guess when I have people on like you who work in the arts, I find that they think that it's a terribly good way to work in terms of, say, understanding these terrible times that we live in.
Mm.
I mean, has that been something for you? I mean, with all the challenges around us, that working in the arts, say, and then not just making a living, but understanding where we are. I mean, that must give you some answers, doesn't it?
Absolutely, that's true. Yes, I can speak for myself, and maybe RS later and some other occasions I explain himself, but my training in acting really helped me to constantly self-reflect, either ethically or physically or emotionally, and that has helped me a lot with my emotional intelligence, I think. Not to sound arrogant again, because but I do want to say, if I don't want to put the artist a bit higher than everybody, because everybody is responding in a different way. It's just those who find a way to express. It might be a room, like a pathway, so we can actually think and feel differently than the concentrated, limited view of the world. So it might be some lawyer or some other person who's not an artist, but somehow finds a form of expression that we could study. Yes, artists are more prone to express something before the thing actually hits. Maybe the example will be, if it's not an old example, will be like the canary in a mine, in the mine.
Yeah.
So yes, I think we should have our ears open to listen to them, but also it's not just artists. There are activists we can listen to as well. There are teachers we can listen to. Like teachers come up and say, "Hey," so that this idea of somebody who expresses something earlier than the rest of us can be seen in others. But yes. Artists are more prone, if they are specifically focused on that, yes. But sometimes, again, arts and entertainment get mixed up as well. So those who are in the entertainment business, they might do that in less percentages.
Yeah.
But maybe some, I don't know, hermit artist, that romantic idea, maybe they're working on it 100%, but only 3 people hears it. So we have that predicament.
Yeah. What, the Biting School, I mean, that's a company that you and your brother have founded. When did that start?
This started in the, I think actually started with the 10-minute version of Cain and Abel long time ago, as I mentioned, in 2013. And then we slowly started, we're like, oh, okay. And then we took this piece to Dancing on the Edge, in the same fire hall, actually,
uh-huh.
with dear friends and great artists, Harja Charisi and Alex Ma, and the four of us tried to make this for the stage. And from there, it was the beginning of the Biting School, and we were just talking about what names do we want, and Farjad was a part of that conversation. We're like, okay, are we thinking this? Are we thinking that? We want to have a biting, but we want to be grotesque and forward. It's a cheeky, I guess, commentary on that we do not want to be a school. We do not want to have a simplified message for everybody. So I don't know if any of those are coming through, but all of it was in the conversation. It was like 6 months we were discussing the name of the company for sure.
And then the company has been producing shows and they've appeared at various other festivals and the sort.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Majorly because of the physicality of it, ends up in dance festivals, but I do believe we are a theater and performance and dance company. And yes, Biting School is the Artist in Residence Dance Center this year, and also the Artist in Residence at Push Festival the coming 2 years.
Well, long may it continue. It's been a pleasure speaking with you today, Ario. Break a leg, as they say in your business.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate this talk. Thank you for listening to me, and all the best to you, Joe.
Visit firehallartcenter.ca for tickets and information, bitingschool.com for more information on the work that Ario and Arash do. Ario Kakpur, join me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.